This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Bertaram and Mark Carman. Welcome into Stacking the Box, Tuesday, April 13th. The draft coming up. We'll get into some of that and a lot of Julian Edelman. Matt Bertaram, how are you?
Good. I am good, Carm. How are you?
I know you have a very hot Julian Edelman take that you want to get out, but let's pause on that. And let me get your thoughts on Britt Reid, who is back in the news today because, yes, he has officially been charged after a long time coming here. And it is not the most pleasant topic, but I think we should hit on that and see, you know, what has happened behind the scenes that's perhaps has taken this long and where does the NFL perhaps, what do they learn from this? And I want to get to Deshaun Watson as well, but this is some breaking news here with Britt being charged.
So for those who don't remember, there was a family that was pulled over on the side of the road on an exit ramp, and Britt Reid's car at 83 miles an hour hit into this family. Now, by the grace of God, nobody was killed. However, tragically, this 5-year-old girl, Arielle Young, was sitting in the back seat, suffered significant injuries. She's still in the hospital. And while her condition has improved slightly, she remains in the hospital. And there is a long, long, long way to go to have a full, healthy life. So we bring it up, as you mentioned, because she has now been charged with a DWI felony count. If convicted, I believe the maximum sentence is 8 years. And so the football side of it is I cannot imagine he will ever be employed in the NFL again. Okay. Britt Reid has a documented history dating back to Philadelphia and things that happened there. Now that it's happened in Kansas City as well, I think that's the end. I mean, thankfully he didn't kill this girl, but you know, we don't know if she's ever going to live a normal, high quality life. And so if he gets convicted of this, there's a very real chance he serves prison time. I mean, this is a very serious thing. In the police report, it states that he was coming from work, that he had a blood alcohol level, I believe of 0.11.
0.113, yep.
Okay, so thank you. So that is well over the legal limit of 0.08. Now, from a football perspective, the question comes, was he drinking at the facility? If he was drinking at the facility, was this a known thing? Did the Chiefs know he was drinking at the facility? That's where you start getting into how this will NFL-wise play out. Now, you know, from a personal level, we've already discussed what the legal ramifications could be. From a football perspective, did the Chiefs know he was drinking at Arrowhead Stadium if that turns out to be the case? If they knew, that's a very big deal. Now, will we ever find that out? I don't know. But that's where we stand.
And the timeline, you know, as Reid told police that night that he had just left work. Reid admitted to having 2 to 3 drinks that night. So if he had just left work and that's when he got pulled over, I'm assuming he didn't go to his car, park somewhere by the K in Raytown, pound down a couple of, you know, shots of Jack Daniels in his car and then start driving. I'm sure he had, well, we don't know, but it would seem logical that that would be that he was doing something at the facility, which, you know, that just takes me back in time, Matt, to, when I first started covering sports way back in the
40s.
Yeah. Late 90s. So, but the first baseball team that I was around, well, maybe I was in there in 96, 97 a little bit, but the 98 Cubs I covered a lot. Like I was there a good amount. It's the first time I was at most home games. And after the game, Mark Grace, Rod Beck, Jeff Blauser, I don't know if people remember these names, but I'm guessing that a lot of people do, a bunch of them, they would have 32-ounce cups of beer filled to the brim, Gatorade cups that they were, you know, they were taking beer. I don't know if they had a tap or just, I think they just had, you know, cans of light beer, whatever the hell they had. They were smoking, and this, and the media was still around. You know, it's not like they're like, hey, Carm, hang out with us. You know, we're in there asking questions, and, right. and this is what's going on. And then they're going to stay later, and then they're going to go probably to one of the zillion bars around there. And now you go in any locker room, the only thing you're seeing is protein drinks, protein bars.
It's a different world.
It's a totally different world.
Yes.
But so this is not a totally different world. Here's the guy who's grinding at the office, and you know he's gonna have a couple drinks at the end of the day, and he's gonna go home. I mean, that's old school right there. But it seems like it's still going on.
Well, and it's just so misguided. I mean, like the NFL has, and I, not that this situation fits the bill. Okay, to be clear, but you know when you see players get arrested for similar offenses, you know, driving impaired, whatever. The NFL has a hotline number that any player can call at any time. And I'm sure this would apply to coaches, although I don't know 100%, but I would have to imagine it does. That you call that number and they will arrange to have you driven to wherever you are going at no cost. They will take care of you because they don't want any kind of issue with DUI or DWI. And unfortunately, you know, now it still happens, but you're right, Carl. I mean, look, you know, it was not crazy. And of course I wasn't covering any sports back then other than just being a fan, but I, you know, it was a different time. I mean, people just, and the world thankfully evolves, but you're right. I mean, would it have been crazy to walk into an NFL locker room in 1994 and see a guy drinking a Bud Light? Probably not. Like I think we're now, yeah. If you walked into a locker room and a guy was just sitting there knocking back at some suds, you'd be like, wow, that's kind of interesting. Okay. Yeah, I don't think 25 years ago, you even would have thought about it.
So the 85 Bears, if we want to just go one more story back in time, they were a straight crazy group, right? You're talking about Jim McMahon, you're talking about the fridge, you're talking, they were outlandish and incredibly fun. Well, when they were winning the Super Bowl, blowing out the Patriots in New Orleans, while they're still on the field, they're yelling up at fans to throw them down beers. Like they were, I don't know if there's video of that, but I've heard the stories. Like they were asking for, send them down. And then I was told one other story where they beat Green Bay. I think I might have told you this one before, but I'll tell it again. They beat Green, or maybe they lose to Green Bay. It doesn't matter. They play the Packers. All right. This is late 80s. After the game, Dan Hampton and Steve McMichael, two defensive tackles, defensive linemen who were best of buddies and straight lunatics. Hamp in the Hall of Fame. McMichael has a argument to be there too, for the record. But at any rate, they go into the bus is leaving in an hour. So they're like, let's go into the parking lot and drink some of the Green Bay Packers fans' beers. So they go out into the parking lot and they're boozing up with you know, the Packer fans. Now here's two Chicago Bears with Green Bay Packer fans outside Lambeau Field after the game, basically, you know, having a good time. They hear the bus start up and Hamp is like walking up to like, you know, hey, wait, don't leave. The bus, Ditka tells him to go. And as they drive past Hamp, he gives him the one finger salute and then, you know, gives him a big fat fine too. So they had to find their way back home. So they just like hung out with the Packer fans. I mean, it was just, you would not, I don't think you would see that nowadays.
No, you certainly wouldn't. And I think, look, the overarching point to put a bow on this is just, you're right. Like sports is just, it's different, but society's different. Like, and rightfully so. And these, you know, with Britt Reid, okay, regardless, forget even his past, which is well-documented. We don't have to go through the whole thing, but you just have to, be better. Like you cannot, however this ends up playing out. Okay. He told when he was at the scene of the accident, he was reportedly telling officers, yeah, you know, I had a few drinks. Now, obviously BAC is 0.113. He had more than a few.
Said he had 2 to 3 drinks.
Yeah. Which obviously that is, I mean, if his blood alcohol content was 0.11, That's well more than 2 to 3 drinks. It just can't. I mean, I don't care what you're doing. It just can't happen. It cannot happen. And, you know, this is something where, again, from a football standpoint, now the big question becomes, how much were the Chiefs aware of it? Did the Chiefs know he was drinking at Arrowhead Stadium, if that ends up being the case? Because if the Chiefs knew, that's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And I don't know that they did. Look, we don't even know for a fact that if he was drinking at Arrowhead Stadium. But it, you know, he, for all we know, he could have been drinking at the complex in his car or something. If that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios that could play out. But if it comes out that, yeah, you know what, he was having some drinks at the stadium while he was in his office or something, and the Chiefs knew, it's a big deal. But I will say this, no, we can move on. Look, I've just learned covering this stuff over the years, just wait for the facts to come out. I mean, all we know right now that matters is Ariel Young, who is a sweet 5-year-old kid, is fighting to regain a normal life. That's the main thing. Beyond that, if he's guilty of the charge that's been brought against him, justice should be served, point blank.
Yeah, no question. And he served jail time before. This is not a one-time thing for Britt. Correct. So obviously he's got some personal issues that he needs to attend to, and should face consequences for his actions without question. Speaking of, by the way, before we get to the draft, we should just update the developments in the Deshaun Watson case for a second here. It's now, if you are putting the civil suit out, that your name has to be revealed, which I found to be that, you know, I'm not a lawyer here. I'm barely a podcast host, but I thought that was a very interesting development. And now he's also claiming that yes, he had relations with some of the therapists.
Right. Consensual, everything was consensual, correct.
Consensual, right. Relationships. It's just another day, right? I mean,
again, you know, I don't know what to add other than just, I mean, look, you pretty much laid it out there. He's facing almost 24 civil suits, a criminal complaint as well at the Houston Police Department.
NFL not doing anything yet.
Not yet, no. But I think for the NFL, there's no reason to yet. You're in the off season. And you might as well just wait and see how some of this stuff plays out. They're conducting their own investigation. I think when you start getting to OTAs, then you got to make a decision here, right? I think if you're the NFL, unless somehow legally this is all cleared up, you just put them on the commissioner's exempt list, right? I mean, that's got to be the play.
Which is why, see, I think they should – I'm a little confused, at least, as to why they have not done that now, because he still gets paid on the exempt list. It's not like the NFL would be offering themselves, opening themselves up to a lawsuit. You're still getting paid.
Right.
And we're going to continue to figure out what the hell's going on here, Deshaun, and legal team. But I think you're right that because there isn't training camp and or even OTAs, they can sit back here. But at the end of the day, I don't see how you can bring him to any of those things until the situation is resolved, however it's going to resolve itself.
I don't know how much guilt he has here, any guilt, everything. Yeah, who knows? We're going to find out here in the coming weeks and months. I'll put it this way. This whole situation has mushroomed into something that originally, you know, I don't think anybody could have thought it was going to get to this level. Not the seriousness. I mean, obviously, even one charge is extremely serious, but the volume. I don't think anybody thought, oh, we're going to get to the point where we're up to 22 civil suits, a criminal complaint. Then his lawyer, Rusty Harden, who's representing Deshaun Watson, comes out and says, well, here are 18 women who massaged him as well, who say he's a perfect client. I mean, if you're doing the math, okay, you got 22 civil suits. There was a woman who came out anonymously who spoke to Jenny Ventress over at Sports Illustrated, who detailed an alleged harrowing situation with Watson. She was also a masseuse. Then that's 22 civil suits, a criminal complaint, a woman who alleges misconduct by Watson in SI, who's not part of the civil suits. So that's 24. Then you have 18 women who say, no, he was great with me as a client. So that you're up to, at least by my count, 42 different massage therapists. Now, does that mean he's guilty of anything? No, it doesn't. Does it raise a bit of an eyebrow? Yeah, I think if you're being honest, yes, it does. Like 40, he's went to at least, you know, 40 some odd massage therapists. I mean, that is not a small number. And, you know, it doesn't imply guilt, but it does imply something that is out of the ordinary for sure.
Yeah. And these two particular circumstances, I think there's one point of commonality. There is an untouchable feeling that a lot of people have when they reach the highest levels in life, and that the rules do not apply to you because you're in the NFL or because you're the star quarterback. And of course, all this is still alleged, I guess. And you know, the same thing with an NFL head coach who's got a very famous father who's winning Super Bowls. But you know, when there's a huge cost to people being pampered and thinking that they can do anything they absolutely want in life, no matter how talented you are or whatever it is, learning that real life is going to come running in at you at some point is an important lesson to learn. So I don't know who, you know, Deshaun Watson, by all accounts, I think everybody would say, pretty smart guy, pretty interesting guy. So this is stunning. But there's some level, and I hear that, you know, I saw one report where he can't sleep. He's completely distraught. His name's being dragged through and the way it is. But the word alleged out there, but I have a hard time believing that at least at this point that he can look at himself in the mirror and think that he did everything perfect in this scenario. There's got to be some ways at bare minimum, right, that he's got to be looking in the mirror. It's like, I just felt like I could do whatever I wanted. I think that's got to be in there somewhere, at least on some level. It's just guessing.
It's grotesquely fascinating to watch how this is going to play out, because this is not going away tomorrow.
No, it's not. All right, to the NFL draft, Rotoram, you got a storyline that's intriguing you the most here other than the run on quarterbacks?
I was going to say, I mean, look, we all talk about the quarterbacks all day long. I'm interested to see, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about Kyle Pitts, but I'm just going to throw out something. Like, I went back and did the research. In the Super Bowl era, the common draft era, which is late 60s on when the AFL and NFL shared the draft, I believe 1968 was the first year of that. There's never been a tight end taken fourth or higher. And Kyle Pitts might go fourth. If Atlanta doesn't trade out, I think he will go fourth. So he could be historical here. Now, if he goes fifth, there's only one other player that's ever gone fifth at the tight end position in the Super Bowl era. That's Riley Odoms, who played for the Denver Broncos, drafted in 72. He was a good player. We made like 4 or 5 Pro Bowls, a couple All-Pro teams. He's really good. Broncos Hall of Famer. And then recently, there's been a few guys drafted sixth, Kellen Winslow Jr. and Vernon Davis. So it is rare air to go that high. And I don't think Pitts is getting past six. I mean, you're rare air to be drafted that high as a tight end. I'm fascinated to see where he goes and then to see how his career plays out, because he is Antonio Gates-esque when you watch him on the tape at Florida. And if he obviously has a career like that, he's well worth a pick. But I'm just very, very curious to see where he goes. And I'm curious to see if he makes history as a top 4 pick.
It is time for us to get rich. Hang tight. We'll be right with you. It's Stacking the Box. We're going to have Jimmy Garoppolo coming up on May the 4th, Verderam, which is exciting. That's one of the storylines that intrigues me. Is he staying or going? What's happening here, San Francisco? What are y'all doing? And if he is going, where's he going? And I would assume he's going before the first night of the draft, right? So that's interesting. I want to shout out my Northwestern Wildcats here, Verderam. They might have two guys go in the first round here. Greg Newsom's a sweet corner. A lot of them have the Bears taking him at number 20. I've seen that on a couple of mocks. And then you got the offensive tackle, Rashawn Slater, who might go in the top 10. Go Pat Fitzgerald. Go Northwestern, baby. Let's go. But for me, the most interesting stuff is going to be about 3 years from now. Who got it right and who got it wrong on the QBs? Because now we're seeing, this is a day two interesting guy. And this is a day three. I mean, we are like looking under rocks to find quarterbacks right now. But one of those is going to come up with a little pile of gold at some point, right? Who's going to be my Gardner Minshew of 2021? Damn it. Bring him to the Bears. So, at any rate, I'm still bummed that Gardner didn't make his way out of Jacksonville. How about our guy, Julian Edelman? Is he buying a ticket to get into Canton?
He's going to need to. I am passionate about this. I spent most of my day yesterday on Twitter just beefing with people who think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. There is no argument on God's green earth for Julian Edelman to be in the Hall of Fame. There's not one. And I will hear none. It is a ridiculous conversation.
Why you got so much beef here, Verderam?
It's stupid. And I can't stand. Look, my buddy has a saying, and it's been so true throughout the years of my life. You can't fix stupid. And there's so many damn people, I swear to God, they're just willfully dumb. And you get these people on Twitter who ought to know better, who sit there and say, well, you know, I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I don't begrudge the fan who says that. Like, listen, whatever. You're a fan of a team. You love the guy. You know, fine. You know, you're Sully from Southie who loves him. Fine. Okay. He had 6,800 yards receiving and 36 touchdowns in 12 years. Now, great postseason player. Okay. No one is arguing that. Three championships. That's all fine and well. And all these people who point out, well, you know, he had the second most receptions in playoff. The man's played like 50 playoff games. I would hope he's got that many. To me, that's a function of the fact he played on New England. He's in the playoffs all the time. Now, he was great in them. But in the regular season, he was a good player. He made zero All-Pro teams. He made zero Pro Bowls. He had 36 touchdowns. You know who had more yardage and touchdowns than him? Dwayne Bowe had a better regular season career in four less seasons. Okay. Now I'm going to keep going for a second here. Have a little fun with this. Another guy who inarguably had a better career, Eric Moulds, 10,000 yards receiving, 49 touchdowns, made the Pro Bowl three times. But Matt, none of these guys had any postseason success. Okay, here's one who did. John Taylor, who went and won three Super Bowls. He is on the Hall of Fame all 1980s team. He made two Pro Bowls. He had 43 touchdowns in his career in the regular season. And, oh, by the way, had a much more famous catch than any that Julian Edelman made. In Super Bowl 23, he won the game 34 seconds left out of Miami against the Bengals. Okay, so you can go on and on and on. Hines Ward, who couldn't be a finalist this year, was a far better player over a longer period of time. Maybe the best blocking receiver ever. And by the way, won two Super Bowls. Another guy, Henry Ellard. Henry Ellard, three Pro Bowls, two first-team All-Pros, 14,000 yards and 65 touchdowns. But hold on. Let's get Julian Edelman into the Hall of Fame over all these guys. Julian Edelman has no business in the world without a ticket getting into the Hall of Fame.
So let me just be on the positive side on this one for a second.
So help me God if you argue that he belongs to be in the Hall of Fame.
No, I'm not going to argue that for a rent, but I'm going to tell you this, my friend. Number one, Julian Edelman had 231 players picked in front of him in the 2009 NFL draft. So the fact that a seventh round pick is even in the conversation to be in the Hall of Fame is minor miracle and should be a congratulations. He also, in those three Super Bowls, he was a Super Bowl MVP. Now, granted, that was in a 13-3 win over the Rams, Super Bowl 53, but he was the Super Bowl MVP for the seventh round pick in 2009, who, if you did just go by his playoff resume, he is a Hall of Famer. Now, unfortunately for Julian, although it's not really unfortunate, the guy's had a phenomenal career, has made a ton of money. He should walk taller than 99.99999% of all people on this planet. But that's not how the Hall of Fame works. We can't just look at the postseason. And what you underlined, MAA Pro Bowls, not an All-Pro once. I mean, in my mind, you got to do that at least five times to even be considered, right? So,
Look, and you're right, by the way. Julian Edelman, as everyone knows at this point, was a converted quarterback out of college. He had a great career, right? Like, which is one thing I will say. I do feel bad. Like, that argument comes up so vehemently on social media about the Hall of Fame stuff. Now, I'll hammer him with that because I do care about the Hall of Fame. I'm big on that. But I love the history of the game. And I don't want to bastardize it. But he had a great career. Like, he certainly belongs in the Patriots Ring of Honor, their Hall of Fame. I mean, he was one of the cornerstones of winning three Super Bowls. There is nothing wrong with it. And if, by the way, if you're a Patriots fan, you want to argue he's in the Hall of Fame, go ahead. Like, that's fine. You're a Patriots fan. You have every right to feel that way, right? I had no beef with that. But if you don't make a Pro Bowl in your career, I have a hard – and look, and this is subjective, of course, because everybody has their own things. In my mind, if you're not a top 10 player at your position at any point in your career, like, how are we even having this conversation? And I don't think anyone would ever have argued he was a top 10 receiver at his apex, right? Like, a great slot receiver. But Wes Welker was a better slot receiver. Like, far more prodigious. My buddy, Seth Kaiser, who's a Chiefs fan and works over at The Athletic and does stuff, he took some heat because he pointed out, I mean, look, Tyreek Hill's played for 5 years, and Tyreek Hill has 47 touchdowns. He's made the Pro Bowl five times, a three-time All-Pro, Hall of Fame All-Decade team, obviously won a Super Bowl, had an iconic catch in Super Bowl. I mean, if Tyreek Hill retired tomorrow, there's a better argument to put Tyreek Hill in the Hall of Fame. Now, obviously, the personal stuff aside here, but when you talk about the NFL Hall of Fame, and every Hall of Fame has its different standards, you're not supposed to bring in the personal stuff. So I do check the personal stuff at the door. But look, he had a great career. But if I see one more person who of consequence argue that he belongs in the Hall of Fame, I might have a nervous breakdown.
He had 6,822 career receiving yards. That places him in 156th place all time, 156.
It's not great. I mean, it's a fine career, but it's not a Hall of Fame career.
No, listen, for somebody who was the 232nd pick again in the 2009 draft to finish 156 all time at this moment in time is an incredible accomplishment. And he's not a Hall of Famer. We got it. Yeah. The closest Hall of Famer, by the way, to that number is Marshall Faulk, who's a running back. Now, Kellen Winslow is in the Hall of Fame.
Tight end,
different era. Look, so
of anyone who's worth comparing, like, you go to the Hall of Famers who are above him, like, just going in order. So Faulk, running back. Elroy, Crazy Legs Hirsch, different era, also played some running back, played some receiver. Okay. Bob Hayes, completely different era. I mean, you almost should just double those statistics from the 60s and 70s. Drew Pearson, who just got in. Jackie Smith, tight end. Bobby Mitchell, played running back and receiver, different era. Ozzie Newsome, tight end. Don Hutson was the preeminent, you know, I mean, he was basically the Babe Ruth of receivers, played back in the 30s and 40s. Tommy McDonald, different era, played in the 50s and 60s.
What do you got on Dante Lavelli?
Yeah, glue fingers Lavelli. Paul Ward. I mean, you have to go. All that's what his nickname was, Carm.
You're the greatest. Seriously, the fact that you could pull out glue fingers Lavelli, on the top of your head. That's why I love doing Stack in the Box with you, Verderam.
I know who he is. He's a great player. Was part of 10 title teams with the, excuse me, 10 teams have played in the title game for the Browns. You four in the AAFC, and they won them all. And then they went to the first six that they played in the NFL.
46-56. He has 6,488 receiving yards, which is why I'm bringing him up, because that's
62
very
touchdowns.
It's very close to Julian. He's in Dante Gluefingers Lavelli is 179th all time in receiving yards, whereas so that is 23 behind Julian Edelman, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
again, slightly different era, the 40s and 50s.
So, by the way, before we go any further, I want to get, we had three reviews come through the pipeline this week, and wanted to get to them all just to thank the fine people out there who are doing it. Clint McKenzie, who is an avid listener both here and to the Arrowhead Attic podcast, he constantly leaves reviews and ratings, and we follow each other on Twitter. He's a great guy. Says FanSided is becoming a juggernaut in the sports media realm. When you give your audience two Stack in the Box podcasts per week, hosted by different but equally exceptional journalists, you have a recipe for true domination. I think we should hire Clint for PR.
No doubt.
I've become a big fan of Matt Lombardo slice of the FanSided pie. His version of Stack in the Box is no less excellent than that of Messieurs Carmen and Verderam. Mr. Lombardo's personal, engaging, extremely knowledgeable about the state of the NFL in any given moment. He is a natural conducting interviews in his friendly, informal style. Mine some true gems from his guest. Simply put, the Matt Lombardo show is timely, informative, and just plain fun.
Way to go, Lombardo!
Yeah, and yes, obviously, look, if you subscribe to this podcast, you're getting the Lombardo show, Matt Lombardo show, in the feed. So please listen. I mean, Matt's a great personal friend, but also does a hell of a job. He had Dalton Reisner on, the Broncos guard last week, who told Matt that Drew Locke is working with Peyton Manning, and that has made national news. That was written up over at NFL.com. That's been talked about on Denver radio for days. So legitimately, I mean, really setting some national topics out of that show. He's done a great job. I do wish that you'll check it out and give him the support. Two other ones wanted to get through real quick. And this one, look, from Susie Met 303, and I'm going to hit this because A, I appreciate it, and B, because I have to get to this one. Verderam is the best in the business. Said right there. I don't know if it'll ever be said again, but it said right there. Verderam, you provide the most unique perspective of anyone in the NFL. I wish you put out more content as I could listen to you every day. That's very, very nice. My wife might kill me if I did that. Congrats on your son. You said you don't like Junior, but what about Matt Verderam the second? I'm the second, and I always loved it. I named my son the third. Don't forget that Mahomes is also a second. Something to consider. Keep up the great work. So glad I found your podcast. I also listened to your Arrowhead Attic podcast. First of all, thank you very much. Second of all, breaking news. We know the name. I appreciate the second thought, and I cannot put another Matt Verderam on people. I cannot do it.
I agree. Absolutely not.
As well you should. So the name is going to be Benjamin.
Yeah.
Benjamin Raymond Verderam. Raymond after my cousin who was gone far too soon. But Benjamin, not named after anybody in particular, Stephanie and I like the name. So Ben Verderam.
That's borderline Jewish, Verderam. This dude, I feel this kid might want to have a good bagel and a kosher dog.
I hope he does. Look, the Italian people also love a damn good bagel. And so, especially ones from New York. Okay. I love bagels. I go to Skokie, which is a suburb of Chicago, for those who don't know, a few times a month. They have a sports collectible, but I love going and getting some old school cards. And right next to it is a Great American Bagel. And I hit the Great American Bagel hard.
Okay, if you ever do that again, just the next time you go to Skokie, if you forget this conversation, please send me a text or call me. You need to go to Kaufman's.
Oh, dude, I go there all the time, too.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay. A big fan. Okay. Jewish deli. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh no, believe me. It's down the street. Yeah, I know where it's on Dempster.
Yes, we look, the Goldbergs are there, and we have a great time at Kaufman's, and everyone is welcome. Please come on by.
It's amazing.
They do a nice job.
So if I'm looking for a heavier lunch, I'll go there, because then I also get a couple cookies.
The black and white's in there.
Believe me. I know. Everywhere I go, I look up delis.
Yeah.
Lastly, a quick review, one here. Person reviewing. I love the title. Football and Comedy Gold. Guys, thanks so much for the podcast. Just fantastic. Me and my wife listen in the car and love the football insights and takes. The best is Matt's totally unabashed willingness to tell it like it is and in colorful but still PG terms that leave us laughing our heads off. The actually sourced info and takes are exceptional, but the delivery takes it to another level. This is the podcast that converted my wife to listening to football podcasts with me. The food takes are also priceless. Just a great hour of entertainment on the road every time. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for leaving the reviews. I always try to read them off. We thank you so much. We enjoy them. We love the listenership. And thank you. And if you leave reviews in the future, we'll read them. Unless we're being accosted, in which case we might lay off.
Yeah, I think we should read those too. Have we been accosted recently?
No, but I'm sure it's coming. Okay. I'm sure it's coming.
Have you seen the movie The Graduate?
No.
Okay, so that's a homework assignment for you. It's young Dustin Hoffman, and the character's name is Ben. Okay. And Hoffman is Ben. And there is a moment at the end of the film where they are yelling for Ben. And it's a beautiful woman who's yelling for Ben. And she really, it is an earth-shattering yell. And so that's how I'm thinking about your son right now. Ben! Right. And it's because she loves him so much, Verderam, which someday, what's his middle name again?
Raymond.
Let's get him out of the womb and get him playing here first before we get him married. But I love it. Congratulations. We're actually, I'm a year and a half into marriage right now. We've been delaying the kid as long as possible. I hate responsibility. But we are, I guess, bringing a dog into the world. So that's a big
bring it into the world.
We are. We're birthing this animal. We're
You're not having the dog.
Right. But we're gonna parent this dude.
What kind of dog?
I don't even want to say it's all of it's embarrassing. My wife is in control.
Does the dog weigh more than 20 pounds?
Carson? It does. Okay, but we're getting it from a breeder, and it just feels terrible. We should be getting it from a shelter. I lost the battle on this one. It's an Australian Labradoodle, and I'm fighting for the name. What do you think of Banks?
Well, I'm good with it. I'm good. Just because obviously Ernie Banks, but I like.
Well,
it.
Right, but she'd see like that. Like I threw out Banks, and she
Banksy.
Didn't. That's what she said, Banksy, and I'm like, yeah, Banksy, great. But so she didn't realize that it was a sports name. So I've got a shot, but then I kind of blew it. Like 5 minutes later, I loved Ernie Banks, even though I never saw him play. And she's like, who's, I'm like, no. Just don't forget about that. The name Banks is a sweet name. Banks is a good name.
Nothing wrong with that. Listen, my father-in-law, his favorite Cub ever, Ron Santo.
Oh, that's
and,
a great one.
And like everything that he can, like his dog's name is Ivy. Okay. And like they're like their Wi-Fi, not the password, but like the network is named like Santo 10. And I saw a bat signed by Ron Santo in that sports shop. And I'll be upfront with you. I think it's like $200-$250. Like it's not inexpensive, but he's done a ton of work at our house. Like he is a great guy. Steve is a great guy. He basically like built out my office and taught me how to like hang drywall and do all this. Like I had no idea how to do any of this stuff. And so I feel like I kind of owe it to him. So for Father's Day, might have to go big and get him, which my dad's going to, I think, punch me in the face if I do that, considering my dad has helped me out for 32 years. And there's no way I've ever spent $250 cumulatively on my father for Father's Day. But we'll see. So Santo, Banks, 69 Cubs. It's a good year.
Podcast is doing well. It's a nice investment in friendship right there.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to get here to, Verderam? Because we're having a little peek behind the scenes. We're having people look in the office today. They're about to walk on through here. So we are up against the clock here. Anything you want to touch on?
No, I mean, listen, I know we strayed a little bit from now. That's okay. It's kind of a slow time. We're having a good time. Listen, no, not anything particular, but I will say this. Damn it, Carm, the Knicks are over 500. We are 55 games into the year, Carm. They're 28-27. They won 3 in a row. Okay, they beat Memphis, Toronto, and the Lakers in a 3-game stretch, which does not sound like a lot, but if you're the Knicks, that is a lot. Julius Randle with 34 points last night, shot over 50%.
Did you see the story? Did you see the story about him? That
Tell me it's not something horrible that I missed.
No, it's phenomenal.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how long this has been out, but I saw it yesterday. I forget where, but Randall, of course, played with the Lakers and played with Kobe.
Oh yeah, he wrote about this in the Players Tribune. But yeah, go ahead. It's a good story.
Yeah. So Kobe would, on a road trip, wherever they were going, wherever they flew to, no matter what time it was, like if they're getting in at midnight or later, he would reach out to that city and find some gym / high school where he could shoot once they landed, and then he would go to the hotel and go to bed. So Randall, in trying to be the best Julius Randall and respect to Kobe, whatever else, he started doing that. So they get into, I think it was Detroit, and he goes to whatever high school and does this late at night. And, you know, he thanks the guy for keeping it open for him, staying there. And then, and I get it. You're a high school person, an NBA guy is going to come there, get to meet him, build a relationship. You're going to, maybe you're interested in doing that. I'm sure they don't have that hard of a time to get that done. But Randall shows up, and the guy's like, the last guy that did this, man, was Kobe. And it apparently meant a lot to him. So
sure,
it's a good reminder for all of us out there that work ethic in life matters. Julius Randle's having the best year of his career, and clearly he's been working hard.
He's been unbelievable. He's been unbelievable. The Knicks basically have four guys. And by the way, and I will throw this out because I know you love him, Derrick Rose has been a godsend. Like, when they traded for Derrick Rose, I really felt like, who the hell cares? The guy is washed. No, turns out he's not. Turns out he's good for about 15 points a game off the bench and is the only guard the Knicks have who can consistently penetrate. I mean, Emmanuel Quickly is a very good-looking rookie, but like any rookie, he has games where he doesn't really do much. And you know what? Rose, just about every night, is getting to the hole, playing good defense. He hustles all. He and Taj Gibson, another bull from what, have brought like this like intensity with them that it's clear why Thibodeau likes them so much. And like, Taj Gibson sets the hardest screens I've ever seen in my life. The man comes around the corner like a Mack truck to shed, like, every game once or twice, he'll just kill some guy with a legal pick.
Well, the Lakers just had their best win of the year. They beat Brooklyn by 25 without LeBron, without AD.
Yep.
And then they just lost to the Knicks by 17. And you're throwing out my old Bulls. So Derek played 20 minutes last night, had 14. Taj played 17 minutes, had 8 points and 10 boards. 10 boards in 17 minutes. That's aggressive.
He was great. He was great. It's honestly probably his best game to Nick. But they have, like, the Knicks are still trotting out some garbage. There's no question about that. Like, if I have to watch Alfred Payton play point guard another season, I'm going to lose my mind. And Reggie Bullock is fine for what he is. He's a 3-and-D guy who really should be coming off the bench, who's starting to. Like, and I don't know, Alec Burks, did he ever play for the Bulls? Maybe he's played for, like, 8 different teams.
He hasn't been a Bull.
Alec Burks, every once in a while, like, he'll have a game where he'll score 4 points, but then he'll have another game where he'll score 30. Like, it's like, I've never seen a guy who just comes off the bench and just starts firing. And it's – there are games where Thibodeau's like, you know what, the hell with it. We're just leaving him in. And he plays 35 minutes off the bench. It's crazy. But they're actually, like, fun to watch. And RJ Barrett is becoming a real, like, legitimate star. It's been awesome.
It's a very weird thing that the NBA is doing here with the play-in game. But we could have a Bulls-Knicks matchup for who gets in the playoffs this year. Because the
possible.
Seven
– could be a 7-10.
Yeah. The set. Well, here's what happens. The 7 plays the 8. And whoever wins that game is locked in. Yeah, so the 7 plays the 8. Whoever wins that game, right now it's Boston and New York, is locked in. The 9 plays the 10. Whoever wins that game stays alive.
And plays the
loss. So if the Knicks lose and the Bulls win,
gotcha.
It would be Bulls.
So if you're a 7 or an 8, so you just have to win one of two games.
One of two.
Whereas if you're a 9 or a 10, you have to win both.
Right.
Okay, exactly. I didn't realize that. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so – and the Bulls,
we're all
right,
playing to just get crushed by the Sixers or the Nets or the Bucks. But I don't care. Like, as a Knicks fan, if the Knicks get themselves into a best of 7 series and just get plowed, Forster, I don't. It's fine. It's fine. Just hang a banner and have a ticker tape parade for this team.
I think you can get a game, maybe get one. All right. we are back next week with a full draft preview, as we'll be 1 week away from draft week, at least. So we'll dive deep into that. And we appreciate you making it this far on the podcast and indulging us with the off the field stuff at the start today, which I know that everybody comes to podcast to be entertained and have a little bit of the non-serious, but we touched on a little bit of serious today.
Yeah, you have to sometimes. It's the way it is.
You got to do it. You got to do it. Congratulations to Julian Edelman on an amazing career. Verderam, I don't think you have to worry about him getting into the Hall of Fame.
If he ever does, I'll pick it outside of Canton.
And Ben, you are the man. Enjoy your time in the womb. We're looking forward. What's the due date?
The C-section's already scheduled, September 10th.
September 10th.
The day after football season starts.
What type of timing is that?
You're gonna argue with your pregnant wife? Because I'm not. All I said was, like, you're gonna have it on September 11th. That's brutal, right? For obviously.
Yeah, we don't. That's true.
You can't do that. And I was like, please, for the love of God, don't have it on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all the comments. We look forward to more to come. Leave them in there. And yes, we'll see you next week. For Ram, say goodbye.
Take care, everybody. Go Knicks. Go Knicks.